You're listening to the N2K Space Network.
With over 8,000 threat hunters analyzing over 65 trillion signals daily, Microsoft works tirelessly with the federal government to keep our nation's data secure. This 30-year-plus partnership is driving mission innovation that is secure by design. Whether optimizing your existing defenses or tackling advanced threats with AI, Microsoft gives you the intelligence and the automation you need to defend at mission scale. Let's work together to stay ahead of emerging threats and secure your mission anywhere. Learn more at aka.ms/fedcyber. That's aka.ms/fedcyber.
No business can hope to succeed without a clear plan, and the same principle should be applied to state agencies. It's why a strategy on how the military works with commercial space companies is vital. It's a pathway on how to integrate commercial products and services to support national security. And the United States has just set out its vision for exactly that.
T-minus 20 seconds to LOS egress. Go for deploy.
Today is April 3rd, 2024. I'm Maria Varmazes, and this is T-Minus. DoD releases its new space strategy, Dawn Aerospace to supply propulsion tech to Cislunar Technologies, AFRL to work with Astrobotic on liquid rocket engine development. And our guest today is Nick Shave, Managing Director of Astroscale UK. We will be discussing the pressing need to address space debris, so stay with us for that chat. Let's dive into our briefing today. The United States Department of Defense has released a new commercial space integration strategy. The strategy, which the Department of Defense says is in line with the National Security Strategy and a 2022 National Defense Strategy, seeks to align department efforts and drive more effective integration of commercial space solutions into national security space architectures. The U.S. military says that it recognizes that the commercial space sector is developing capabilities and services that have the potential to support national security. The new strategy is based on the premise that the commercial space sector's innovative capabilities, scalable production, and rapid technology rates provide pathways to enhance the resilience of DoD space capabilities and strengthen deterrence. John F. Plum, Assistant Secretary of Defense for Space Policy, said in a press release that the commercial space sector is driving innovation, but the impact on national security will be measured by how well the department can integrate commercial capabilities into the way we operate, both in peacetime and in conflict. The commercial space integration strategy highlights four priorities to achieve integration, and here they are. First, to ensure commercial solutions are available when needed, the department will use contracts and other agreements to outline requirements. Second, DoD will achieve integration of commercial solutions during peacetime, including in planning, training, and day-to-day operations, to allow the department to seamlessly use commercial space solutions during crisis and conflict. Third, DoD will protect and defend against threats to U.S. national security space interests, including those in space and on the ground, and where appropriate, commercial space solutions. DoD will promote the security of commercial solutions through three lines of effort: norms and standards, threat information sharing, and financial protection mechanisms. And lastly, the strategy emphasizes that the department will use its full range of available financial, contractual, and policy tools to support the development of new commercial space solutions. There's a lot in that, and we look forward to seeing how this strategy gets implemented. Moving on to other items now. This is an interesting one. The United States wants to create a standard time for the moon. The White House has instructed NASA to establish a unified standard of time for the moon and other celestial bodies. the head of the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy, instructed the space agency to work with other parts of the U.S. government to devise a plan by the end of 2026 for setting what it is calling a Coordinated Lunar Time, or LTC, according to Reuters. The LTC would provide a timekeeping benchmark for lunar spacecraft and satellites that require time precision for their missions. Deployment of atomic clocks on the lunar surface is also under consideration. Dawn Aerospace has announced a lunar mission contract supplying green propulsion technology to Japanese company Cislunar Technologies. Now, Cislunar Technologies is developing the bus system for the Tsukimi, which is a lunar terahertz surveyor for kilometer-scale mapping project, which is led by an industry-government-academia consortium. Dawn Aerospace will supply to Cislunar its system that uses non-toxic propellants, nitrous oxide, and propylene, which they say are safer, cheaper, and simpler than traditional hydrazine systems. Dawn also recently announced their first deep space mission with asteroid mining company Astroforge. Astrobotic and the U.S. Air Force Research Laboratory Rocket Propulsion Division at Edwards Air Force Base have entered into a cooperative research and development agreement, also known as a CRADA. The partnership aims to enhance both organizations' capabilities and collaborate in the development of an advanced liquid rocket engine, rotating detonation rocket engine technologies, and on-base rocket flight testing capabilities using Astrobotic reusable rockets. Astrobotic will design, develop, test, and demonstrate emerging commercial capabilities with critical applications to air and space military operations, including tactically responsive space access, hypersonic propulsion and testing, and tactical point-to-point rocket transport of cargo. Under the CRADA, AFRL and Astrobotic plan to use Astrobotic's Zodiac and Zogdor-class vertical takeoff, vertical landing rockets to flight test new liquid rocket engines, integrated systems, payloads, and concepts of operation to mature these types of capabilities. Boeing's first crewed Starliner launch has been delayed a further 5 days. NASA and Boeing had been aiming to launch on May 1st, but they're now looking at May 6th at the earliest. NASA shared this detail also. The date adjustment optimizes space station's schedule of activities planned towards the end of April, including a cargo spacecraft undocking and a crew spacecraft port relocation required for Starliner docking. China launched a Long March 2D two-stage liquid propellant rocket from Sichuan Province earlier today. The spacecraft was carrying the Yaogan 4201 satellite. Yaogan 42A is the latest addition to China's growing fleet of remote sensing satellites used for Earth observation, using reflected and emitted radiation to detect and monitor physical characteristics of objects on land and at sea. Both the Yaogan 42A satellite and the Long March 2D rocket were designed and manufactured by the Shanghai Academy of Spaceflight Technology, which is a subsidiary of CASC. And on yesterday's show, we led with the news of space debris landing on a home in Florida. And that debris is thought to be from the International Space Station, although NASA is still working to confirm that. And now we're hearing reports of space junk lighting up the sky over Southern California. Flaming streaks of what appears to be the orbital module from China's Shenzhou 15 astronaut mission, which launched in November 2022, were seen from Sacramento to San Diego. Apparently, the 23-ton core stage of China's Long March 5B rocket, whose launches helped build Tiangong, routinely fall to Earth in an uncontrolled fashion, and there have been no reports of damage on Earth so far. And happy note to close out with today, the team behind the OSIRIS-REx mission have been recognized with the Neil Armstrong Flight Achievement Award. The Origins Spectral Interpretation Resource Identification and Security Regolith Explorer team, that would be OSIRIS-REx, y'all, received the award for exceptional performance and extraordinary perseverance in successfully delivering a sample from asteroid Bennu to Earth. The award is given annually and recognizes the extraordinary contributions made by individuals or teams in the advancement of space exploration. Bravo to all involved. We could not agree more with this great choice for an award. And that concludes our briefing for today. Head to the selected reading section of our show notes to find further reading on all the stories that we've mentioned. Today, we've included an announcement from iSpace US, an opinion piece from The Hill on space threats, and an MIT tech review looking at the need for better space weather forecasting. Hey, T-Minus crew, if you find this podcast useful, please do us a favor and share a 5-star rating and a short review in your favorite podcast app. It'll help other space professionals like you to find the show and join the T-Minus crew. Thank you so much for your support. We do really appreciate it.
Don't struggle to align your organization's cybersecurity with business risk. Get the only solution that goes beyond reacting to threats with vulnerability and risk monitoring. You need the next evolution of MDR, and only Critical Start delivers it. Critical Start doesn't just monitor and respond to threats. They put you in control by detecting suspicious activities, quickly responding to contain threats, and identifying your most critical assets and protecting them against vulnerabilities and exposures. With continuous visibility, expert guidance, and measurable risk reduction, Critical Start has redefined what it means to manage cyber risk. Demonstrate provable security maturity to your leadership while positioning your program to achieve the greatest risk reduction per dollar spent. Stop fearing risk and start managing it with Critical Start. Visit criticalstart.com and request a demo today. That's criticalstart.com.
Our guest today is Nick Shave, Managing Director of Astroscale UK. Nick started by telling me about the company's origins.
Astroscale was established just over 10 years ago now in Tokyo in Japan. And our founder, Nobu Okada, set up the company to address the in-orbit servicing opportunity that's coming. And one of the first things we were looking at was space debris removal and reduction. So we've established now a number of entities around the world. So we have an entity in the US, one here in the UK, one opened in France last year. We have also a subsidiary in Israel, and we have the Tokyo headquarters. So we're quite a global company, and our focus is to make space sustainable for future generations. That's really our mission. And we're building technology to enable debris reduction, in-orbit servicing, like refueling new spacecraft. And also, we're looking to the future to see where else we can help with assembly and manufacturing space too. It sounds quite futuristic, but it is coming.
Yeah, I find the whole area of space sustainability just fascinating, and the different approaches many organizations have to this incredibly challenging problem are just fascinating. Can you tell me a bit about what Astroscale is doing, like its approach for space debris removal?
Sure. We have four main business lines in Astroscale, and one of them is active debris removal, or ADR. And we are building technology, spacecraft, and systems and operations capability to go into space with quite agile spacecraft, because they have to be. They have to approach debris objects in orbit that might be uncooperative. And what that means is we can't command it, the object that we're, we can't control it in any way, and it's not providing any data on its location or its orientation. So we therefore have to use sensors on board our spacecraft, augmented with sensor information from the ground, to work out the orientation, if it's tumbling in a particular way, and then get closer and closer to the spacecraft gradually. Now, what's paramount in this is not creating more debris. So we have to do this in a very safe and robust way and reliable way. And that's key to what we do. So we've built technology which we call Rendezvous Proximity Operations, RPO. And that is fundamental to everything we do. And it will also be fundamental to many things in the future, like in space assembly or refueling spacecraft. We've now got that capability, and we're proving that in space. We have a mission that launched a few weeks ago, actually, Address J, built in Japan. The UK team is closely working with our Japanese colleagues on that and providing the ground segment and some of the operations capability. And that's going really well. So that's en route to approach a 3-ton rocket body that is a piece of debris in orbit that was launched by JAXA about 10 years ago. So that's a real good demonstration of this capability I was just explaining.
I think sometimes in my mind, my mental model of what satellites can do is a little more sci-fi than reality. I would imagine most space debris is, as you said, non-cooperative, which is such a great way of putting it. I mean, do we have a sense? Is it like 99% of it? How much of it can really maneuver?
Really good question. To try and put a percentage on it, I don't have the figure exactly to hand, but it's probably in the order of 70 or 80% is non-cooperative, because there's many space agencies, including NASA and European Space Agency and JAXA in Japan, are tracking objects in space. And the consensus is there's about 40,000 objects in orbit at the moment, in different orbits, in low Earth orbit, in geostationary and others. And out of that 40,000, around about 9,000 to 10,000 are operational spacecraft. So you can see it's probably 70-80% that are debris objects or fragmentation objects where there's been collisions in orbit and bits of spacecraft or rocket bodies. That's the sort of thing that we're left with up there.
Speaking of collision, I was just thinking of the near miss between the two non-maneuverable satellites, the US and I think the Soviet satellite. It was just a few months ago in the news. And I wonder for companies like Astroscale, is the goal to clean up everything in orbit, or is it just so we just don't have those near misses, or is there something in between? Maybe my thinking is too black and white between those two spots.
No, it's a good perspective. I think there are some specific objects in particular orbits that are dangerous and could create more debris. And you may have heard of the Kessler effect, which was proposed by a very famous NASA scientist in the 70s, and that's what we've got to avoid, is this chain reaction in orbit. So we really have to focus on those dangerous objects. There's some big rocket bodies in quite congested orbits that we need to remove, and also address what's coming. So we need to start to address sustainability in the predicted large constellations, some of which are already there, like Starlink and OneWeb, and others that are coming soon. So we could have, I mentioned 9,000 operational satellites in orbit at the moment. We could have another 20 or even 50,000 over the next 10 to 15 years. So that's the thing we need to really address, is how do we make that sustainable from where we are today?
Yeah, and I would imagine, sort of to segue a little bit, this is where refueling also comes into the vision as well, which is another area, which is just, sometimes I can't believe we're doing something like that. That's just so fascinating.
Yeah, excellent. Excellent opportunity, I'd say, because as we do air-to-air refueling, what customers are telling us is they want to change the dynamics of the space industry, really, and start to refuel. At the moment, the spacecraft is launched into orbit and has to take its fuel with it onto orbit, and it can't be refueled. So there's significant focus on this at the moment from government and commercial customers to see how we can extend the lives of satellites by refueling on orbit. And I think it's coming. I'd say it's about 3 to 5 years away. We'll start to see this in orbit actually happening.
So this is a great opportunity for us to segue into a press release about the UK Space Agency's Active Debris Removal Refueling Feasibility Study, and Astroscale is a huge part of that. So can you walk me through that a little bit, please?
Yeah, sure. So this is a study that the UK Space Agency are looking at. So at the moment, there's a mission that they're developing called the Active Debris Removal Mission that is going to go and remove two UK licensed debris objects launching at the end of 26. And that, it was, UK Space Agency were quite forward looking, I would argue. They required that mission to be refuelable. So now they've proposed this next study, which will actually design the spacecraft, which will then go and refuel that mission and start to create a circular economy. That's as I was saying earlier. So we've put together an expert consortium with companies like Thales and Ineospace and Airbus, big space companies in Europe, and Orbit Fab UK. They're a US headquartered company, but they're building fuel valves and standardization aspects, and also another company called GMV, which are really good at ground segment and operations and flight dynamics. So we're bringing together all of these skills with the Astroscale internal skills, and we've created a good mission definition program. And what we hope then is the UK Space Agency will take this forward after the study, this 8-month study, into a real mission.
That's exciting. Yeah, I'm using the word exciting, and I know that I'm full of hyperbole today, but it honestly... There have been a lot of very interesting developments coming out of the UK Space Agency, a lot of really interesting movement, really fascinating initiatives like this one. What is that like, being in the UK, part of the space industry there, and seeing all this activity?
As I say, I've been in the space industry in the UK for quite some time, and the transition, which has been equivalent globally as well, from a sort of government-led space industry to real commercially driven, is happening here too. And we're seeing so many more companies, more smaller companies, startups that are getting involved in really innovative technology and mission systems. So that's really good to be part of that. We still have a big role in the European Space Agency as well. We're the fourth largest contributor as a country to ESA. And, it's matching and combining the ESA work that we do with the commercially focused national work, and obviously the more government and defence side as well, which UK is quite capable of too. So there's a lot going on, and it's a good place to be in the UK at the moment.
We'll be right back.
The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business.
Welcome back. It feels like just moments ago that we were getting pretty hyped up about Transformers on the Moon. JAXA's slim moon lander brought with it Transformers, for real. So that is how we ended up with Transformers on the Moon. And JAXA has worked with Transformers toy maker Takara Tomy, not just on the Moon Transformers, but on a whole host of transforming toys. And for all those who are fans of things that are more than meets the eye, Takara Tomy is now making a Transformer version of JAXA and Toyota's planned Lunar Cruiser. The real Lunar Cruiser was unveiled late last year, its first concept anyway. And should it ever become something true to life, it'll not just rove lunarly. No, it's less rover and more RV. The Lunar Cruiser has a pressurized interior, so it would allow multi-day trips on the lunar surface in the self-contained vehicle. Kind of a neat idea. Unlike the real concept, though, the Lunar Cruiser toy version transforms into Optimus Prime, leader of the Autobots. And I should say, for all you collectors, the toy is already sold out, sorry. But it did retail for $75 when it was announced. No word yet on what nation's lunar explorer is going to embody Megatron. If someone steps up and volunteers to host the Decepticons, believe me, I'll be sure to let you know. That's it for T-Minus for April 3rd, 2024. For additional resources from today's report, check out our show notes at space.n2k.com. We'd love to know what you think of this podcast. You can email us at space@n2k.com or submit the survey in the show notes. Your feedback ensures that we deliver the information that keeps you a step ahead in this rapidly changing space industry. N2K Strategic Workforce Intelligence optimizes the value of your biggest investment, your people. We make you smarter about your team while making your team smarter. This episode was produced by Alice Carruth, mixing by Elliot Peltzman and Trey Hester, with original music and sound design by Elliot Peltzman. Our associate producer is Liz Stokes. Our executive producer is Jen Iben. Our VP is Brandon Karp. And I'm Maria Varmazes. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.
Now a word from our sponsor, Netskope. Netskope is a worldwide leader in SASE and Zero Trust. Its unified platform, Netskope One, provides optimized access and Zero Trust security for people, devices, and data anywhere they go, helping customers reduce risk, accelerate performance, and get unrivaled visibility into any cloud, web, and private application activity. To learn more about how Netskope helps customers be ready for anything on their SASE journey, visit netskope.com.